Welcome to Food Talk. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Teresa, and we're talking with the people who are growing, harvesting, and producing food here in our beautiful coastal region.
And also to those who are cooking, serving, and eating the freshest food available in our communities.
Join us in conversation about what's in season right now here on the North Coast.
Today we are talking about pasture-raised meat with Lance Waldron and Tammy Lesh of Lance's Farm Vittles in Bay City.
And Hank Johnson, chef and proprietor of the Wavecrest Inn in Cannon Beach. Welcome.
I wonder if each of you could tell us a little bit about yourselves. Maybe, Tammy, could you start?
Yeah, I'll start. I grew up on the North Coast in Tillamook County, just outside of Manzanita. And didn't start farming until about, 6 or 7 years ago when I married Lance. And it's all been harvest time since then.
How about you, Lance?
I'm Lance Waldron. I grew up just south of Garibaldi. My dad grew up there. My grandparents moved there in like 1943. Then I went to college in Central California, spent a year in New Zealand, bummed around, came home because I couldn't find any place nicer and anything else I wanted to do. So I'm there farming again still.
So how long have you guys been married?
6 years.
Yeah. Something like that.
Something like that.
And okay. Your family is a dairy farm, right?
Yeah.
Were they always a dairy farm?
Yeah, pretty much. It's always been a dairy farm. We've had a small herd of beef cows on the side forever.
Like your grandparents started.
Yeah.
And Hank, tell us a little about you.
Yeah, well, I grew up on a farm in Kansas with a big family of 10. And, of course, we raised a lot of animals for slaughter, and we also had a big garden. And then I moved out to Portland back in 71 and finally retired from the Park Bureau in 2003 and moved down to the Wavecrest.
And when you were at the Park Bureau, what were you doing?
So I started as a horticulturist, and then I became the curator, the rose curator for the garden. So I was curator for 18 years there.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a tough job.
And now you've moved to some place where it's very challenging to grow roses.
Oh, man, it's totally different. I mean, the climate is amazing on the coast compared to Portland. Actually, just going in a few miles, it makes a big, big difference.
But it is a great place to raise animals.
Yes,
good
it
grass.
Is.
Good grass. We grow really good grass out here. And one of the questions that Kristen and I had earlier was the whole label of pasture-raised meat. And we wondered, Lance and Tammy, if you could explain what that means. When people say meat is pasture-raised, it's not really, is it an official certification? Is it just something that people...
No, it's not. Pasture-raised is not official. We actually don't call our meat pasture-raised. We always consider it grass-fed.
Okay.
Because it's fed no grain. It's either grass or hay. Alfalfa hay, grass hay. A lot of people just want to say pasture raised because they don't want to go on explaining that what is grass fed and versus grain fed. But all of our animals are out on pasture most of the time, most of the year, except in the wintertime when it gets too muddy. The pigs have been moved inside, but all the beef cows and sheep are still outside.
Yeah, I was going to say, could you tell us the different types of animals that you raise?
Yeah, we have a herd of beef cows, a small flock of sheep, and some pigs. And we just got more pigs the other day, our only sow. We normally buy feeder pigs and feed them out, feed them grain and milk from the dairy. But Tammy got a pair of pigs last year, an American guinea hogs, and she had just had her second litter yesterday.
Wow.
So what breed of beef do you grow?
They're Galloway Cross. There's some Hereford and Charolais mixed in there, little Angus. But we've been predominantly using Galloway bulls the last few years because they're from Scotland, where it's wet and cold. It's very similar to here. So
they do well here.
Yeah.
And they're smaller bodied, and so they finish a little bit faster.
And what makes grass-fed beef taste better? I mean, we hear that it tastes better, and we know it tastes better. So could you describe to our listeners why do you think that's the case?
Some of it tastes better. I'm not going to say all of it tastes better, but some of it tastes better. I really have a hard time with this because all my life, that's all I've ever eaten is grass-fed beef. So when we started to... do farmers markets and sell individual cuts, I had to like go to the store and buy beef, so I knew what everybody else was eating, and I quickly quit that. But yeah, it's one reason we chose Galloway is because they do taste different breed taste tests. Like everybody here is all about Angus beef, and now the Hereford breed is starting to have Hereford beef. Well, in these taste tests, Galloway have always, for taste and juiciness and flavor, has always been in the top three.
Wow.
And so we thought we needed every advantage.
And also, it depends on what they're eating. I mean, obviously, you know, if you have an elk or a cow, for that matter, eating sagebrush, that's going to taste different than grass. So even different grass species are going to taste different when you eat the actual animal. Because we've had people that come by and say, I bought some grass-fed meat, and it didn't have much taste, and I thought it was supposed to be full of flavor. And if you have like a monoculture of grass, that won't have as much flavor as a mix, like a pasture mix, or maybe eating some shrubs too in the wintertime.
So what do your beef eat?
Whatever grows wild.
Well, another interesting thing is they had another taste test, and the beef that ate ryegrass and white clover had the best tasting meat. And here on Oregon coast, we grow really good ryegrass and white clover. And that's basically, our pastures are just a mix of everything. We haven't reseeded a pasture in probably 15 years.
You also raise sheep as well. And I know the variety that you raise, are those the ones, and you sell wool also, don't you? You spin and sell it. Is that why you chose that variety of sheep? Because they are multi-purpose?
Yeah, we actually have two flocks of sheep. We started with the Icelandic sheep because they're considered a multi-purpose sheep. Multi-purpose being wool, meat, and you can also milk them, but we're not milking any sheep. So the wool's considered very warm, medium softness, and they also do really well on grass, and they're very good foragers. Like the first thing an Icelandic sheep does when it gets into a pasture, it checks the perimeter. Where's the best place I can get out if I run out of food? Doesn't matter what's there. They'll check the perimeter, then they'll start eating the best grass. They're very good at picking what's going to make them well. The second flock are hare sheep. We needed more sheep, but we didn't need more wool. So we're like, well, let's get something that we don't have to pay to shear. So we got some St. Croix, and then we use a Dorper ram in with those, and they've done okay. This wet ground's a little bit hard on their feet. They get some foot scald problems, but we're getting a coastal herd used to the coastal bacteria.
That's great.
You're toughening them up. Yeah. And then you also do chickens, as far as I understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just, last summer, we started a flock of laying hens. We do meat chickens in the summertime. I don't know, we do 500-600 of them out in the pasture in portable pens and fryers and broilers. And then we started a flock of laying hens. Just, well, we always do things because customers always keep asking us for them. You know, first
those pesky customers.
Yeah.
First, it was just beef and lamb, and then we did a few pigs, and then people kept coming by. So, do you do chickens? No. Do you do chickens? No. And Tammy goes, "Well, maybe we should do chickens." And I say, "Find some place that'll butcher chickens, and we'll think about it." So the next day she hands me a business card and says, these people do chickens, so we do chickens.
You know, that leads into a question that I have for you, because I know that for a lot of the coastal meat raisers, having their meat slaughtered someplace that's a USDA-certified facility can be a challenge. And I wondered if you guys could talk a little bit about that. Where's the nearest place that you can take your meat to animals?
It's definitely is a challenge. The nearest place that does what we need for the farmer's market, there's two places, Mount Angel Meat, which is in Mount Angel, Oregon, and Mark's Meat, which is in Canby, Oregon. And we tend to take most of our meat to Canby because they have a double shrink wrap, and it is a good display for the customer, especially new customers can see what they're buying.
Yeah.
And they do a great job. It's a small family. The owners are on the cutting room floor, so the quality control is really good. But they're 2.5 hours away, so you can see how that's going to be a real time sucker for us. And also, everybody wants to use them. So we just got done scheduling January through September butchering.
Wow. You schedule that far out?
It's hard to know what customers are going to want. I mean, because we've been doing it a few years, we have an idea. But the big joke with the butcher is, well, here's our schedule, due to change without notice. And that's how she has to do it with all of her customers.
So, and explain, you know, why is it so important to have it done in a USDA-certified facility? What restrictions are there on what you can sell where?
Yeah, to sell to a restaurant or individual pieces to a customer, like at a farmer's market, it has to be at a federally inspected facility, USDA.
Right.
For holes and halves, we can take it to a state inspected facility because they're actually buying the whole animal. And there is a place that's fairly close. Well, there are two places that are close to us. One just opened in Tillamook in November, which is great, Tillamook's meat. We haven't taken anything there yet because when we called, they were booked up, which is awesome for them.
Wow.
That's great, yeah.
And then we also Willamina Meat is a good place just west of Salem. And they're, like I said, both state. For the chickens, we have to take them. There are only a few places that even butcher chickens. Most places that do pigs and cows and sheep don't do chickens. The place that does chickens mostly just does poultry, and they're near Willamina, but it's, again, it's state, so we have to, our chickens can only be pre-order only. We can't sell those.
Your customer has to own the chicken before they can
slaughtered,
right?
That's one of the most confusing things that I think a lot of market customers have struggled with. So they have to come to your booth, pay you for the chicken, and then they can pick it up the following week.
Yeah.
Although it's the same chicken.
And it's obviously not very practical.
No.
But if you're going to own the animal, do you have to own it for more than 5 minutes?
No.
Oh, okay.
As long as you purchase it ahead of time.
Yeah. And we do have customers that actually do their own. To come and buy the animal and do it themselves.
Oh, so they buy it live.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have a few adventurous souls.
Yeah. It's becoming more popular, I think, as time goes on.
If you can do it, it's sure cheap not to pay processing.
And is there a reason why you guys don't process your own meat? It's just complicated and too much to deal with.
It's another whole business aspect that we really have. We'd prefer to hire somebody to do it.
Okay.
So we need to take a little station break right now. You are listening to Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM and KTCB Tillamook 89.5, and streaming live at coastradio.org. And if you are just tuning in, you are listening to Food Talk, fresh conversations about food on the North Coast with our guests, Lance Waldron, Tammy Lesh, and Hank Johnson.
So Hank, let's start talking about eating, because
that why not?
Talking about the raising of meat is so fascinating, but the reason you're doing it is because there's demand for it here on the coast, and I know that Hank provides some of that demand, and I've had some of his cooking, and I know that he's very passionate about cooking meat. So tell us a little about what do you like about using the kind of meat that you get from Lance and Tammy.
Well, actually, I spent some time in Paris at La Varenne, and so I do have a little bit of background in cooking, and of course, growing up on the farm, I know what farm-raised animals taste like, and of course, vegetables and fruit and all that sort of thing are also from that area. So I just, I enjoy cooking. To me, it's a rather relaxing process, and obviously, a good product is you're going to get the best flavor, the best results from something that's raised and grown well and at its ripest point, you might say.
Mm-hmm. What's one of your favorite cuts of meat from Lance and Tammy?
Well, I actually, I love their lamb, but I also like pork a lot. Mm-hmm. And I especially like doing pork roast, pork shoulder. And so one of my favorite ways is to take a pork shoulder and to butterfly it out. And if it's bone in, I will always remove the bone. But I'll fillet it out so that not any of the meat is more than an inch thick. And what I do is I'll salt and pepper that. I'll put herbs if you want. I particularly like sage. But I also like to smother the inside with tomato jam.
Ooh, tomato jam. Tell us a little more about tomato jam.
Well, I discovered tomato jam here just this past year, and it's like making any kind of fruit jam, only in this case you add a few more spices, salt and pepper and a little bay and some cayenne. But you cook it down till it's thick, so it's like any jam. But there's also, of course, sugar in it, so mm-hmm. it's somewhat on the sweet side. But I love it on pork, and particularly this cut. I'll put all that in, and then I'll roll the shoulder back together again, tie it up. And I like to roast it in a hot oven, and I always put it on a bed of mirepoix, which, of course, is onions and celery and carrots. And sometimes I'll drape it with some bacon.
Ooh, I hear everybody's stomach grumbling here.
I'm getting so hungry.
it's called overlarding. You know, you want to do that. And then I always use a meat thermometer. Mm-hmm. I think that's really something that's essential in the garden. I mean, in the kitchen. And you can also tell just by the way things smell uh-huh. when it's getting done, and also by touch. I mean, if you're doing a steak or that sort of thing, you get used to the way it feels when you push on it with your finger. And, of course, it's quite soft in the, you know, medium rare stage. And then, of course, it gets more firm as it gets more well done. But back to the pork thing, I always pull it out and tent the roast with right. foil for, you know, 15 minutes at the least, but up to 30 minutes is fine.
And what is then, that doing for it?
Well, what happens is once that meat is heated up, it will relax. And when it's relaxing, it actually will absorb some of the juices back in.
Okay.
And then, of course, I always make a sauce out of the drippings that are there. And what I like to do is I like to add either wine, or you can use stock, or you can even use water, particularly if you have a lot of glaze and caramelized bits on the pan. And then I will strain that off, and I will put it in a degreaser, and that is a container that has the siphon that comes down at the base of your container. And that way you can pour that juice off and not have the fat in it. And lots of times I'll use that just as a side dressing. And, of course, you can thicken it. You can thicken it with flour. But if you want a kind of a sheeny finish to your sauce, use cornstarch. And so, yeah.
Yeah,
we are
yeah.
all coming over to your house for
okay.
dinner.
Yeah. All right.
We'll be so ready for this. I know.
Hey, well, speaking of bacon, you know, you guys make amazing bacon. It's a maple glaze base bacon, isn't that?
Well, first you got to start with good pork.
Right. Really good pork.
Yeah, there's one guy we used who does a maple glaze on his bacon, and he did some experimenting, and we had some bacon that, well, he was explaining to me that the trick to it is to get the right amount of sugar and the right amount of salt. And most people can't tolerate salty bacon. And I think as time goes on, they don't like real salty bacon. We get more. And so he starts lowering the salt amount, and pretty soon you have bacon that has no salt and no flavor.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we had a batch of that. So
salt's
that
important.
Didn't turn out too good.
You don't sell that?
No. But then now he's got it adjusted right, and it's pretty good bacon. Yeah.
So when you take your meat to be processed, they actually then do the bacon and the sausage there.
Some places, like Mark's Meat and Canby, they don't do any of the curing. That's sent someplace else. It's also inspected, and their cure is inspected. And then they do the bacon and the hams, and then it comes back to them, and then they cut it up and wrap it.
You know, there are these cuts of meat that everyone's really excited about, bacon and shoulder roasts and all those things. And I know you sell a lot of those, but that's not the whole animal. And are there parts of the animal that it's hard for you to sell? I mean, are there customers for some of the more unusual cuts? Or what are things that you know, you get asked for? And
yeah, the
sweetbreads?
Yeah.
are you their main sweetbread customer?
Yeah. Yeah.
The hardest, you know, obviously each animal has its own trials and tribulations. Usually with pork and beef, we don't have a problem getting rid of it, unless it's something really odd somebody asked for. Like one time a customer wanted beef cheeks. Mm-hmm. Of course, she asked us one day and we never saw her again, and meanwhile we've got 6 bags of beef cheeks that nobody wants.
Yeah.
Or pork head. You know, it's
the whole pork head.
The whole pork head. Not everybody wants the whole pork head. And, you know, pork heads take a lot of space in our freezer. So we call friends and say, we got a recipe for you.
Head cheese.
Head cheese, yeah. The hardest thing is with, we've been doing veal the last couple of years, and I'll let Lance expand more on that.
Well,
oh, veal is a loaded word, isn't it?
One of those customer-related issues where we kept people would come up to the booth, and they would kind of cut kind of close, and they'd kind of lean in, and they'd go, so, do you guys do any veal? Because everybody was so against veal because of the way veal was raised on an industrial model. And there was a few people back east that started to raise veal and calling it old world style veal or suckled veals, where they would put bull dairy calves on, like two or three on a cow, and turn them out in a pasture. And then when they get to be, you know, 300 pounds, and they would off to the butcher plant. And so we said, yeah, we could raise some veal. We could raise some veal. So we raised a couple. And then and that's where you get your sweetbreads from. And, you know, everybody wants sweetbreads. We found out that people want sweetbreads, which is one per animal.
Explain what the sweetbreads are for people who don't know.
Thyroid gland.
Okay.
A hypothalamus, right?
Yeah, thyroid gland.
Yeah. And it gets smaller as the animal gets older. So when it's over a year old, it's fairly small and it's not worth bothering with. But when it's younger, it's larger. And I don't know how, I've personally never eaten it, but we have people that want sweetbreads. They want veal shanks to make osobuku, and they want veal cutlets. Nobody wants a veal roast. Nobody wants ground veal. Nobody wants any of the rest of the animal. So we are very reluctant to raise many more veal.
Your ground veal was great. I had some of that. Yeah. It was really good.
And people have to understand how it's raised. It's not raised.
And it's also expensive to, it's not that expensive for us to raise, but it's very expensive to butcher.
Right.
And it's hard to butcher it right because of the delicateness of the meat.
Sure. Sure.
So if people want to keep getting veal from you, they better be willing to buy some of the other parts too.
Order a half or a whole veal.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, it sounds like you end up having to do a lot of customer education. I mean, you're training your customers on what they need to do.
And vice versa.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, both ways.
We have orders for beef tendon lately.
Beef tendon, really?
For soup stock.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
You know, so I go to Chris at Mark's Meat and I go, so we need some beef tendon. Taking some stairs, and she goes,
which one?
I don't know. So it's an educational process both ways.
But. Interesting. And I know, Hank, you've done head cheese, right?
Yeah, I actually
didn't you make head cheese out of the infamous pig?
Yes. We roasted a pig on the beach just down the street from the Wavecrest and had a wonderful time with it. As a matter of fact, Lance grew the pig for us. I think he fed it hazelnuts and whey, but I'm not exactly sure. But yeah, we had about a 35, 40-pound dressed out pig, and we soaked burlap in wine and stuffed the cavity with peaches and rolled it up, and then put it on a grill down. On a grid down on the beach, and covered it up. And 4 or 5 hours later, uncovered it, and it was quite delicious.
Yes, it was really good.
It was an amazing pig. I remember that. Didn't it catch on fire? That
I was
coming
going
out of the
to
pig?
Say.
Well, the coals were pretty hot, and so we had to take pitchforks to get it out of the pit. And when the air hit the burlap, it caught
old
on fire.
Old world recipe.
Yeah,
it still tasted fantastic.
Oh, it was the brandy soaked peaches in the pig's body cavity that caused fire.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
But so then you took the head and you made head. And explain to me, head cheese has always kind of grossed me out. Can I just be honest? And maybe I just haven't had it.
Right. I think when you're talking about different parts of animals, that's something that I really enjoy using. And I will cook down the whole head. In this case, the head was already cooked. But head cheese, you'll use the tongue. You can use the heart in it. Very much the meat that's around the head, the jowl, and that sort of thing. And then you make an aspect. And so if you're making your own aspect, of course, the bones that you have with the animal,
explain
you can cook
what
down.
That is.
Aspect.
Well, aspect, the cartilage that's in the bones, you cook down, and then, of course, that will be a natural gelatin.
Okay.
And so that's what, when you go to a butcher shop, particularly in France, you'll see these lovely pieces of head cheese, and there's a lot of clear gelatin that's in it, plus the diced meat. And they usually will throw carrots or something in there for some color.
Okay.
But it's obviously all that meat has been cooked down. It's tender. So it's in it, you know, it's called head cheese.
Okay, next time you make it.
Yes.
I want to try some of it. I want to get over this childhood fear of head cheese. I just remember seeing it in the supermarket at the deli case and just thinking, head cheese. It just sounded so disgusting to me.
Did you eat the try the country pate he made with the liver?
I don't think I did.
Well, tell us about your country pate.
I love making pates. And here again, when you're making pates, and they don't have to be liver pates, but in this case I do like them, I'll always line the tureen with bacon, and then of course I'll grind up the liver, and in some cases I'll add some pork or veal to it, and spices, and then cover that up, bake it in a slow oven, and voila, you have wow. Pate.
It was really good.
So excited good. That when Lance and Tammy came up here from Bay City today, they brought with them my order of meat that I'm going to put in my cooler and take home with me, and I am so inspired to roast something very soon or cook something. This is just, I know that it tastes good, and certainly I did not eat meat for many years until we moved here to the North Coast and started buying meat from you guys when we were both doing the farmer's market down in Tillamook, and, you know, Packy had to talk me into trying the beef. I was sure I wasn't going to like it, and it's a whole different world from industrial raised beef. It is just amazing.
Yeah.
And
we have a lot of new customers like that that want to try it, and they usually will start with the pound of ground beef because it's cheap, it's familiar.
Yeah.
And that's, as far as tasting a difference in beef, that's where I notice it the most is in the ground beef because it's mixed in with fat, and fat holds a lot of flavor. And
so if people want to buy your meat, where can they do that?
Oh, in
many places.
Yeah, you can always get a hold of us at the farm.
Uh-huh.
We do 3 farmers markets in the summertime. We do Tillamook on Saturdays, Manzanita Friday nights, and Cannon Beach Tuesday afternoons. We have a storefront, a little booth in the new 2nd Street Public Market in Tillamook. It's open 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday, like from 10 to 6 or 7.
Sure.
And
what's the phone number of the farm where they could reach you at?
503-322-2226.
And Hank, if people wanted to book a room at the Wavecrest Inn or perhaps participate in some interesting forays in cooking with Hank, how would they reach you?
Well, they can reach me over the phone.
Oh, and what would the number be?
503-436-2842. And it is a B&B, and of course it was built about 90 years ago. It's always been an inn. I have 8 rooms there, and of course I like cooking, and so sometimes I do these sort of special dinners and so-called underground dinners, and we have a great time. As a matter of fact, we had a wonderful time last night.
Sounds like you're still recovering from it.
I am. I'm totally recovered. Oh. I'm ready to do it again.
Okay. Well, we are at the end of our show, and I just want to say thank you so much for coming and talking with us today and telling our listeners all about pasture-raised meat or grass-fed meat on
thank
the North
you.
Coast.
Thanks so much, everyone. And thanks to Luke and Katie for our theme song. Thanks to Mark Albrecht, who is our sound engineer.
And thank you for joining us for today's Food Talk, fresh conversations about local food on the North Coast.
Please join us on the first Monday of the month from 9:30 to 10 a.m. for another conversation about food on the North Coast.